Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 30. Etadrupam bhagavato.
Etadrupam bhagavato.
Hi arupasya chiratmana.
Hi arupasya chiratmana.
Maya gunai virachitam.
Maya gunai virachitam.
Mahadadibi atmani.
Mahadadibi atmani.
Etad.
All these.
Rupam.
Forms.
Bhagavata.
Of the Lord.
He.
Certainly.
Arupasya.
Of one who has no material
form.
Chit Atmanaha.
Of the transcendence.
Maya.
Material energy.
Gunai.
By the qualities.
Virachitam.
Manufactured.
Mahat Adibir.
With the ingredients of matter.
Atmani.
In the self.
Translation.
The conception of the Virat universal form of the Lord as appearing in the material world is imaginary. It is to enable the less intelligent and neophytes to adjust to the idea of the Lord's having form, but factually, the Lord has no material form. Purport. The conception of the Lord known as the Vishvarupa or the Virat Rupa is particularly not mentioned along with the various incarnations of the Lord, because all the incarnations of the Lord mentioned above are transcendental, and there is not a tinge of materialism in their bodies. There is no difference between the body and the self as there is in the conditioned soul. The Virat Rupa is conceived for those who are just neophyte worshippers. For them, the material Virat Rupa is presented, and it will be explained in the second canto. In the Virat Rupa, the material manifestations of different planets have been conceived as his legs, hands, etc. Actually, all such descriptions are for the neophytes. The neophyte cannot conceive of anything beyond matter. The material conception of the Lord is not counted in the list of his actual form. As Paramatma or Supersoul, the Lord is within each and every material form, even within the atoms, but the outward material form is but an imagination. Both for the Lord and for the living being, the present forms of the conditioned souls are also not factual. The conclusion is that the material conception of the body of the Lord as Virat is imaginary. Both the Lord and the living beings are living spirits and have original spiritual bodies. Om Agyana Timirandasya Janangana Shalakaya Chakshum Nitamina Tasmaya Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chit Munovistam Stapitamina Bhutale Swam Pagadamayam Dharati Swaparantikam Mukham Kuroti Vachlam Pangum Langate Girim Yat Pipata Mahambande Shri Gurun Jinatarinam Pancha Kalpa through the strap, the person may be Evacha, Petitanam Pavnebio, Vaishnavebio, Namo Namaha, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nichananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shiva Sadi, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So all these forms that have been listed as various incarnations of Krishna, these are eternal forms of Krishna. And we understand that Krishna appears in his original transcendental body, whether it be in the body of a swan, the body of a boar, or of a fish, it is still Satchit and Ananda. Whereas when Krishna is exhibiting or manifesting this Virat Rupa, it is actually a material form, having its origin, of course, in Krishna. So all bodies, material and spiritual, have their origin in Krishna. So the material body is functioning. On a small scale, we can understand our body works and functions because of the presence of the spirit soul within that body. So similarly, we have this universal form manifested by Krishna, But it is imaginary because it is not an eternal form, just as our bodies are imaginary, and after some time our bodies are just going to decay and go 6 feet under. What is eternal is the living spark within within that body. And in that way, Krishna is explaining very clearly that this universal form, this material form, is shown to those neophytes, or those who are very much still in their elementary state of God realization. So they want to be able to perceive God through material senses. Therefore, Krishna, by his potency, manifests his material energy and displays his wonderful manifestations. So this Virat Rupa, this universal form, also indicates that everything is within Krishna, and Krishna is within everything simultaneously. So his universal form, the different lokas, the different systems, are compared to different parts of this universal form. From Krishna's feet up to his waist, different parts of his body. Srila Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 12 that nothing in material creation actually can escape Krishna, because Krishna is everywhere, and his universal form emphasizes this point, that wherever you go in material creation, whether it is in Mahatala, Rasatala, Talatala, or the lower planetary systems, or you know, the middle planetary systems, the upper planetary systems, Krishna is still the controller. Krishna is still the predominator. He's still the cause of all causes. But at the same time, Bhagavad Gita gives us a clear understanding of how Krishna's energies are working. Right? How is it that Krishna is actually in control of matter and spirit simultaneously? And how is he not affected by it? How is matter a manifestation of Krishna's energy? So Prabhupada often uses the example of the sun, that you know, we have the sun, but it exhibits or shows its energy through the sun's rays. But even more potent is approaching the sun planet itself, whereas the sun rays have their limited capacity of causing intense heat or fire. So this Virat form is also explained by Krishna to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. So it is in the middle section of Bhagavad Gita, in which the process of devotional service is explained. The first part of the Bhagavad Gita is dealing with karma yoga, different subsets of karma yoga. Then the middle six chapters are explaining devotional service, and the last six, of course, they highlight devotional service, but the main context, is jnana yoga, knowledge about Krishna. So in these middle six chapters, Krishna starts explaining confidential knowledge, knowledge about the body and the soul, and how we're different from our body, how we're not actually eternally made up and existing only based on these energies of Krishna, the material energy of Krishna. So knowledge that has been given by Krishna from the seventh chapter is explained as confidential knowledge. And after that, Krishna is answering Arjuna's inquiries more about material nature, who is the controller, what is the soul, what is the super soul, what is Brahman. And there Krishna again takes it further and explains even more confidential knowledge about the soul, about matter, and the controller of both, where these energies actually originate and who is responsible for administering these energies. And therefore that knowledge in chapters 8 and 9, where Krishna is explaining his opulences, is explained as more confidential knowledge. And specifically in chapter 9, that which is most confidential is revealed to Arjuna by Krishna, explaining how the Jivatma is eternally and naturally part and parcel of Krishna, and the intrinsic qualities that the soul is the servant of Krishna. So in that way there's a gradual revelation from what is confidential knowledge to the most confidential knowledge. And eventually, because Arjuna at that point was convinced after hearing Krishna's opulences in material creation and how he sustains both matter and spirit, Arjuna then asked this question to Krishna to reveal his universal form, not only for himself, but because Prabhupada mentions that he had to establish certain things, especially that Krishna is the Saman Bonam, because he is, you know, the beginning of the parampara. This Bhagavad Gita is spoken to Arjuna, so he wants to establish Krishna as the supreme. So he asks Krishna, manifest your universal form, because in the future there might be miscreants, or there might be ignorant personalities who will not accept you as supreme, or there might be personalities who will come and call themselves supreme. So Prabhupada, in a few classes he was given in London on this verse specifically, text 13, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that, you know, there will be so many rascals in the future, there will be so many people who are into denying Krishna's having a form, that they will want to just focus on this Virat Rupa as being eternal and not wanting to accept Krishna in his original two-handed form, and they will claim themselves to be God. So in this way, Krishna, please reveal your universal form, and in the future if anyone comes, then they should also manifest this universal form to show that they are God. So still to date, I don't think there's actually anyone in material existence who has manifested a universal form where we can see all the planetary systems, lower, middle, upper, where we can see Lord Brahma, we can see Mahavishnu. Like, no one has actually been able to do that. So this is a way in which we can, you know, use this knowledge as checks and balances. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, is saying that Krishna is the source of all incarnations, and even the material creation is Krishna's source. So if anyone really claims that they are God, they should be able to manifest this universal form. And if they can't, we understand that they're actually not God. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, all this knowledge has been given. All this transcendental knowledge is the only subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Although in some sections there will be information about some different signs, you know, some metaphysics, a little bit of astronomy, a little bit of military diplomacy, so many different aspects may be given, but all of them are actually based on Krishna, and that is what makes the Srimad Bhagavatam transcendental, because you have parts of the Vedas that is just material knowledge, the military sciences, the military arts, astrology, Ayurveda, Vastu. These are all material sciences that have been given in different parts of the Vedas. But Srimad Bhagavatam specifically is giving transcendental knowledge through the Vedanta Sutras, through Upanishads, the summary of the Vedanta Sutras. They are given this knowledge so that we can actually understand what the goal of the entire Vedic system is. So this literature that we're reading is actually, we understand it more through devotion. Whereas if we just take any other literature, we're just using our mundane or our material senses, our mind and our intelligence to try and understand. So Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to make us surrender. And for the jnanis, it might be a bit difficult because they're on the mental speculation platform, or, you know, philosophical speculation. And Srimad Bhagavatam goes in deep and deals with the finer points about the existence of the jiva, about Krishna's position. So it's not only touching lightly on reality, it's not only touching lightly on matter and spirit, but it's actually going into the finer details about Krishna and his opulences. So Prabhupada mentions that less intelligent persons are always eager to ask if we can show them God with their material senses. And henceforth, that is why Krishna explains that everything in creation is actually resting on him. Everything in creation works because of his potency, because of his presence in the creation. Therefore, Krishna manifests different attributes in nature, in different empowered beings, and like that, people who are materially inclined, they can get to see, you know, Krishna's wonder, they can get to see Krishna's opulence and hopefully at some stage, at some point, surrender to Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But for a devotee, when reading these scriptures, understands not only Srimad Bhagavatam, but also when studying something like astrology, astronomy, etc., a devotee understands it from the viewpoint of Krishna. Not that we separate Krishna from anything. We understand, yes, there is astrology, yes, there's military science, but how do you use that in Krishna's service? And how do we understand that ultimately everything is up to Krishna? Like, Krishna can change anything at any point in time. Even if we go to the best astrologer, that is just still dealing with material subject matters. But if we understand that the main fabric of creation is lying on Krishna, then everything we do is actually aimed and directed towards understanding how Krishna works. Another important point is that, yes, Krishna expands himself as the super soul, entering into every atom. And at the same time, we can see that because of the presence of the soul and the super soul, matter comes to life. For example, our body comes to life because we have the soul within the body. So that is the reality. The reality is the presence of the spiritual spark. However, the material body is working and guided by the Supreme Spirit itself. So at some point, when the soul departs, or when the soul exits from the body, we can see that matter actually is dead, that matter has no life. It's actually, it depends on the soul. So although Krishna has these manifestations, which are just, you know, minute opulences of Krishna, matter has a beginning, it has a middle, and it has an end. So its form is not really eternal. The elements are eternal because they're coming from Krishna. You know, we have four different types of annihilations, in which, you know, at the end of the day of Lord Brahma, his life, when the false ego totally becomes vanquished, at the end of, you know, Brahma's 100 years, etc. All these mature elements go back into the body of Mahavishnu, into the Mahatattva, and again, at the beginning of creation, these living entities, the mature elements, are released. And thus they start acting, they start being active, because that is the nature of the soul. So Krishna, time and time again, not only in the Srimad Bhagavatam but also in Bhagavad Gita, is showing his opulences in the material world in a way to actually convince us more that he is supreme. Right? Because we're used, at this point in time, we have people manifesting golden eggs or some ash, or doing some mental gymnastics, bending spoons and, you know, staying underground for like 10-15 days, and people take them seriously to be God. So they, you know, the conditioned soul is used to being convinced through the blunt material senses. So it's very easy for the soul, for the conditioned soul, to perceive so-called material elements. Therefore, Krishna repeats his opulences time and time again, not only describing his universal form, but describing his material creation, so that we may see actually there's no one who can perform these activities. He has to be the Supreme Person. You know, in just one universe, this is what's going on. Not to speak of other universes, the same thing is going on. How is it possible for an ordinary person to perform these activities? So by understanding Krishna's opulence, we develop a mood that is very important, so that we don't come familiar with the Lord, or it's just Krishna, he's just a cowherd boy. In the beginning, the first 9 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam are establishing Krishna's opulences. Different Shaktis of Krishna have been explained elaborately, so that we get to understand that this is the Supreme Person. Not only is he, you know, the cowherd boy, you know, the son of Mother Yashoda. Not only do we understand his rasas, but we also understand his tattva. know his, how his potencies are acting. Therefore, we hear about all these opulences to show us that, you know, this person is great. He can perform superhuman activities. So over and over again, Krishna is explaining, I'm the taste and water, I'm the fragrance of the earth, I am the light of the sun and the moon, I'm the ocean, I'm so many things. Krishna is explaining over and over again so that we get convinced. And even after Krishna reveals his universal form to Arjuna, Arjuna's mood, Prabhupada is mentioning that, you know, at the beginning of 12th chapter, Arjuna goes in folded hands, bowing down and offers prayers to Krishna, because he has seen, okay, this, I've been thinking he's just my friend, but actually this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Arjuna starts offering him prayers like that. But at the same time, the position of a living entity, we are eternally servants of Krishna, parts and parcels of Krishna, and we have a certain mellow or a certain rasa with Krishna. And we will only be fully satisfied once we're in that rasa. So for a devotee, the universal form of Krishna is not really appetizing to worship. It's not really attractive because it's a ghastly form. It's not so pretty. That's why a devotee is not really interested in worshipping the universal form. A devotee is interested in continuing a loving friendship relationship with Krishna. And this is the point Prabhupada makes as well, that the devotee doesn't get too baffled by the word Prabhupada used, by the wonder of the universal form. You see something so magnanimous, you're just thinking, wow. Right? We see it all the time. People go and see the Eiffel Tower, or they go see the Statue of Liberty, all these Eureka Towers, whatever. People are just like, oh, there's so much awe and reverence. Because I think it's just so magnificent. This is amazing. The pyramids in Egypt, right? The Great Wall of China and the Taj Mahal is just like, wow. This is, you know, there's so much awe, there's so much reverence, there's so much wonder. So this is the mood that the universal form will make one have. But for a devotee actually doesn't want that awe and reverence. A devotee continuously wants a loving attitude, friendship with Krishna. So although Arjuna asked Krishna to manifest his universal form, he did it not for himself particularly. He wasn't really riveted about seeing a universal form, but he wanted to establish it because in the future there would be so many miscreants, as Prabhupada would explain. There'd be so many people who would claim to be God, who would claim to be the Supreme. So can you manifest this wonderful form so that, you know, they're checked and so that people don't get misled? So this is the basis as to why Arjuna was asking to see the universal form. And Arjuna after that did not actually want then to... Arjuna after that asked Krishna, okay, now I've seen the universal form, please go back to original form. No, he didn't want to stay in that mood of having to see the manifested universal form, because that's not his eternal occupation, to worship the universal form. So after that, Krishna revealed his four-armed form of Narayan and then back to his two-armed form. And there's also a big significance in Krishna revealing his Narayan form as he did at his birth in the prison cell of Kamsa. And because this chapter is dealing with the incarnations, Krishna being the source of all incarnations, we can see that even Lord Narayan comes from Krishna. Because Krishna revealed from his universal form, he changed to his four-armed form and then back to his two-armed form. So even Lord Narayan is coming from Krishna. Krishna is the original. He's the avatarian. He's not an avatar. He's the original form of Godhead. And all the innumerable forms are coming from him. All these, the expansions, the parts, the portions of portions, all these different vibhutis and the avesha, they are all coming from Krishna. Krishna is the original. So in that way we can get to understand that yes, this universal gigantic form is a product of Krishna's energy. It's imaginary. But Krishna is the fabric because he instills life into it, just as Krishna has instilled life in this body by putting the soul in the body. But this form, we know it's imaginary because after some time it's going to go back into earth. It's not permanent, it is not eternal. So Krishna's form is eternal. Krishna is the source of all incarnations. And in every incarnation, it's explaining how each incarnation is manifesting with certain potencies, with certain vibhutis for that specific reason. So whether it's kurma or matsya, nishingadev, they have specific functions and potencies. Or whether the Shaktiyavesh avatar, they have specific functions and potencies they're going to enact at a specific time. And once that's done, once Krishna does his business, he goes back to his original home, his planet. And all these, most of these incarnations, they have their planets where they're worshipped. Some of them, you know, Nrisimhadev is at a specific planet, Varaha is a specific planet, and they're enacting their pastimes there. So these are eternal forms of Krishna. But this Vishwarupa is not an eternal form, it's an imaginary form to bewilder the atheist. Because there's impersonalists who will gladly embrace the universal form and say, you see, Krishna has no form, he's formless. Where the devotee understands Krishna has a form. This is not his eternal situation, this is not his eternal body. It's an imaginary one specifically meant for people like yourself. But people take the universal form so seriously, and people take the material body very seriously. I just, you know, I'll use the example of myself. You know, I take my material body very seriously, whether gross or subtle. I get so caught up in it because I think it's very dear to me. It's the best thing since sliced bread, this body. But gradually I have to understand that this body is temporary, and I shouldn't embrace it as if it's, you know, my very dear life depends on having a material body. Life goes on after the body vanishes. Life goes on after you annihilate your material mind. So in that way we can get to learn from Krishna, because we are minutely in, we have minute qualities of Krishna. And Krishna is eternal, Krishna is Satchidananda. We are also the same. The living entity is also explained to be Atmarama, self-satisfied, because he just has Eka Buddhi. He has one intelligence and it is fixed on serving Krishna. So in that way the living entity is Atmarama, self-satisfied, because we give satisfaction to the pure self, the supreme self, Krishna. And automatically we become satisfied just by pleasing Krishna. So Krishna doesn't take material form so seriously, because, you know, he doesn't even have a material form. We have, in a way, borrowed this material body and we think that it is ours, but it is actually not. We think that we are actually American or Spanish or Italian or from Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, all these stans and whatever. We think that we're that, but we're actually not. We're more than that. We're just beyond all these stans and all these America, New Zealand, Aussie, etc., etc. That has nothing to do with our real identity. So the difference between us and Krishna never gets into forgetfulness. We can, because that is our DNA structure of the soul. We are a marginal potency. So we can, in a way, be misled due to our desires. But Krishna can never forget. So Krishna remembers everything he has done, past, present, future. He controls everything. He never forgets. But we can't even remember, you know, what we were doing yesterday at 9:40. Maybe vaguely, we can kind of remember. But what we were doing when we were 13 years old, we can't remember. Or what I was saying at 8:15, I can't remember. I was saying something in here, but exactly what, I don't know. So this is the condition of the material body. That's not us, that's just the cage that we're in. Originally we're just full of knowledge. We have a pure consciousness. Everything about us is pure. But we've chosen to act otherwise. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is a very important scripture, because it gives us higher transcendental knowledge in its finer point, in its most fine details, as compared to other sections of the Vedas that may give us material science or some kind of material knowledge. This is why we take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. There's nothing that the Srimad Bhagavatam cannot solve. Even on an emotional, mental, you know, intellectual platform, Srimad Bhagavatam can solve everything. You take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam means you're taking shelter of Krishna's words. You're taking shelter of Krishna as a person. Same as when we chant Hare Krishna, we're actually taking shelter of Krishna. He is there. It's not that Krishna is, we have to ring him, send a fax 6 months in advance, I'm going to chant Hare Krishna from next year onwards. And Krishna is always there. That's how powerful he is. It's just up to us if we want to embrace Krishna's presence in our lives. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions. To a certain degree, you can say that, because you know you have your three stages of God realization. You can realize Krishna and his all pervasive energy, Brahman, as Paramatma. But with the impersonalist, it will take, as Prabhupada will mention, it will take a very, very long time, because they actually decry Krishna having a form at all, not even a material form. They say he has no form. The Brahmavadis, they know that Krishna has a form, but they choose to merge into the Brahman. So there's only three bona fide ways of getting to Krishna: through Bhagavan realization, Paramatma realization, and Brahman realization. Gradually you get that elevation to the topmost level. But the impersonalists, unless, Prabhupada explains, unless they come into contact with a pure devotee, they can't actually get entry into personalism. Like the four Kumaras, they got entry because they were even more fortunate, because they directly got blessings from Krishna by being able to smell the aroma of Tulsi and understand that it's coming from Krishna. They got purified. Or by Narada Muni, a very, very pure devotee. Otherwise they get stuck into the fact that there's actually no, God has no form. Or some of them think God has a form, but it's material, so it's not necessary. They think he has a material form. So why worship someone who has a material form? I have a material form, I might as well be God. I can worship myself as God. And that's what some of them do. They meditate to become God. A neophyte is a beginner, like someone who's on, you know, elementary school. Yeah, so you really, you're just kind of crawling. But most of us, you know, I'm still a neophyte in devotional service. It's just still on step one. It means someone who's beginning to try and understand God realization, so they can show appreciation of nature of creation, seeing it as God's wonderful creation. Then gradually they get introduced to the finer aspects of, okay, there's more beyond just the material creation. Now let's go to the spiritual creation of Krishna. Yes.
Why do we worship them for us?
And the of rivers or of the mountains and the Himalayas. Okay, so sometimes Krishna mentions what he wants us to do. Right, he will manifest himself in the ocean, in the sun, or in, he'll manifest himself in the Shalagram Shila or in the Govardhan Shila. So Krishna stipulates and says, okay, this is me, I've expanded myself, I've entered into this particular form, and this is how you can relate to me. Same as the deity form. Some people say, God is everywhere, why do I need to worship the deity? I can go outside, I see God everywhere, why should I come to the temple? And Krishna says, you know, okay, if you really want to get to know me properly, I want you to accept me in this form, this Acharya-Vigraha form. And Govardhan Hill, that is, you know, that's the deity of Krishna. And Krishna has said, okay, you worship me as Govardhan, you offer me, I love sweets. So you offer me sweets. This is Govardhan. So this is Krishna in a different mood saying, okay, I want you to worship me in this specific way. So Krishna states, you worship me like this. And the Acharyas come and say, you worship Krishna like this. Because otherwise, you know, we can worship our hair, we can go and worship, you know, our shoes, and Krishna is everywhere, he's in every atom. So I can go and worship anything, but if we do that, you know, we'll be worshipping anything that flies and crawls. But Krishna says, you know, worship me like this. Just as when we study to, I don't know, whatever people study in IT or law or medicine, we know when you write out your case, there's a certain flow that you have to write. You know, when you write an essay, you have to mention these points. It's standard. It's mandatory. So for Govardhan, when people ask, you know, why do you have to worship Govardhan Hill? Because Krishna said we worship him in that form. Krishna didn't say we should look at the sun every day and worship the sun. In some cultures, they do worship the sun. But that's not what Krishna prescribed us to do. We follow what Krishna says.
Sometimes it's very easy to say, oh, this person is an inversion of the nanny's devotees, or something like that. But still, as a devotee, sometimes we know that Krishna has a form, we don't want to be here at this level or anything like that. But there's a big deal of inversion in ourselves, despite the fact that we know that Krishna is personal. How do we get rid of that?
How do we get rid of our impersonalism?
Yeah.
That Krishna is a person and etc. Okay, how do we get rid of impersonalism? We get off the mental plane and we stop being mechanical. Because when we're mechanical, we just do things on autopilot. So sometimes our heart is not even in it. We don't think, some person might actually get a bit offended by me acting like this. Or some person might not like, or maybe I was a bit pushy, or maybe I'm not thinking about everyone else around me. So we're just thinking, I want to do this, I'm going to do this. But while we do that, we're actually, you know, creating a little bit of disturbance around us. So we're in that way, we're impersonal. We're not taking, you know, Krishna's service into account. It's not that just you, let's say, for example, you're just sweeping the floor. Right, so you kind of like start here, finish halfway, you start there, then you start mopping and doing this, and you leave it half done. Oh, it looks clean. Oh, Krishna doesn't mind. It's not so dirty. So we're not putting our heart into it. We're just thinking of, I have to be there, I have to do this, I have to do that. So we're going all over the show. So when we're impersonal in our service, or when we're impersonal in trying to treat Krishna and his paraphernalia, we should remember that we don't perform devotional service on a mental platform, but we actually perform devotional service with bhakti. So we have to actually be conscious all the time. If we're not conscious, then it's very easy to be impersonal. If we don't know that our activities, we do a service that might impact the next person who is coming to do a service, that it might make it a bit difficult for them, or it might slow them down, etc., etc. So to deal with impersonalism, I would say we have to become more conscious, more knowledgeable as well, and not just be mechanical in our activities. Does that help?
Actually, there was once a comment to the mother of the sister in the Parisha conflict to act diversity.
Yes.
Significance of worshiping Krishna and Govardha, the importance was in the context. People used to believe demigod worship is something that they had a concept of worshiping demigods. So Krishna was kind of in that particular belief and asking people to worship him rather than worshiping demigods. So to break that understanding or practice of devotion and doing the worship of devotion demigods, so that he manifested himself as a Govardhan and asking him to remember him every time, every call, rather than remembering and worshipping the demigods and something of them. So he rather wanted him to serve in different forms and that is the significance of the world. Because he is trying to establish his worship rather than worshipping demigods. That's the reason so both the worship is very important. So looking at even any form in remember Krishna, remembering and basing on time serving demigods. So that's why both the worship is very important. Yeah, in that form. And my question, the second part of this question that you mentioned, is the living entities are Atmaranas.
Yes.
You mean Atmaranas are only those few liberated souls who understand self?
Yes.
All of us, like,
you know, all of us to some degree, as Prabhupada sometimes would say, because our original Krishna consciousness is already there in the heart. So we actually don't know that we're pure living entities. Originally we're Satchidananda. Krishna consciousness, there's a verse in the CC, it is eternally established in the hearts of all living entities. But, because we're covered over, that has been completely annihilated. So we don't remember. But those living entities who know what the real self is and who know the activities of the real self, they are self-satisfied. Because their real self means you're joined to the desires and to the needs and wants and pleasures of the Supreme Whole. And because Krishna himself is the topmost Atmaram, the living entity who links up with Krishna by the process of pure bhakti also becomes self-satisfied because he knows who he is in relation to Krishna.
That's right. Only those people who know self
Atmaramas. Not all, at this point, not everyone. We shouldn't go out and say, you're an Atmaram, it's only a matter of time, you know.
It's not.
And also, you know, Prabhupada is also explaining that it is by, even to see, you know, the universal form, what you speak of Krishna's material manifestation, just to see Krishna himself requires mercy. Even just to understand that, you know, I'm an Atmaram or I'm an eternal living entity, part and parcel of Krishna, you know, Krishna gives the knowledge, the remembrance, and he also gives the forgetfulness. So to understand all these finer points from Shastra, from Srimad Bhagavatam, it is all by the mercy of Krishna. We sincerely endeavor to try and reawaken our dormant love for Krishna, and the rest Krishna reciprocates. That is the main difference with Bhakti Yoga and all other yogas. Everyone else is only on your own strength, but we rely mostly on Krishna's mercy. Because this is now the finer aspects of our existence, this relationship with Krishna and in the different rasas. Not just vaguely, yeah, I'm spirit and I'm one with the universe and it's all love. Like really, seriously, who are you? Not just a floaty type of philosophy, but finer elements. So we can all become Atmaramas, be established in our true identity, as eternally parts and parcels of Krishna in pure devotional service. Okay, thank you very much. Grantrad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Shri Prabhupada Ki.